Hello everyone, this is Billy Spencer with Geek for Chic Weekly. The game exclusive I have for today is Dragon Age 2. Even though I only clocked in about 29 hours in the game, I still haven't finished it. I feel like I have enough information to give my take on the game. Dragon Age 2 is a sequel to BioWare's game Dragon Age Origins. This is one of the games I've been waiting for this year. As soon as I saw a trailer for Dragon Age 2, I thought it was going to be pretty badass. And when I mean badass, I mean it was just gonna explode. You know, it's gonna be compelling, immersive, all that. And was it worth the wait? Well, the answer is yes and no. Dragon Age 2 is an enjoyable role-playing game where you start your journey in Kirkwall, where your dialogue choices matter, such as in Dragon Age Origins. In this game, you encounter many familiar faces from the original Dragon Age game, from Origins and Awakening. Isabella. Anders. Anders was a character you met in Awakening, the expansion pack. Nathaniel's sister is even in this game. While you also meet new characters such as Varric, Fenris, Merle, and many others. While in your journey is in this new adventure, you will face dragons, mages, Templars, and many more. The graphics are very beautiful and well done. The landscaping is very detailed. You can just look at the buildings, look at the mountaintops, and the character designs are improved from Dragon Age Origins. Some of the old characters seem to gotten a lot of more detailed in their appearance in this sequel, like Isabella and Anders. They look more detailed and it's really beautiful. The dialogue options have been tuned to where you choose what you want to say. Like you can be nice, comedic, or just a hard ass, and it'll say options that I don't want to do this, but your character is going to say something to the line to the point of he doesn't really want to do it, but he's still being an asshole for saying it. They're implying what they want to say, what you want. Choices matter in Dragon Age 2. It can affect if someone is your rival or your friend. The more friendly you make them, the more likely they will go with your decisions and often start some romances with both genders. Now, I got to the point where Isabella was one of my romances, but I also got to the point where Anders wanted to be my romances, and I was like, I don't really want to do that, so I kind of broke his heart. The inventory system is changed. You're not able to change your party members' armor. You can't change their helmet, their chest plate, the leg plates, or boots. You can change their weapons if they have the stats needed for the weapon. You can change their rings and their amulets, which is their necklace. You can also change their belt. The armor itself you cannot change unless it specifically says for that character. And some of that is hard to find, which is annoying. I mean, I would like to equip them with armor of my choice to ensure their survivability. It would be nice. But I guess it's to make the game more realistic. Another gripe with the inventory system is the capacity. I believe it's 50 is not enough. They should at least give you 100 at least, because with 50 you have the armor and you have weapons and you have rings. You also got potions and whatnot. And when you're going to dungeons and you're just looting all this stuff, you're like, well, is this valuable? The sack of pebbles, that sounds valuable. Well, we also got ornate, that sounds valuable too. And we got a weapon, two-handed weapon, that could be valuable. And the more you start accumulating, you fill up that inventory really quick. And when you fight, like, get to a certain point, open a chest, and you see something you want, inventory's full. You have to, like, make room. It gets really annoying. The tree system ability has improved compared to the last one. It's easier to navigate and choose what you want to be depending on your class. In the first Dragon Age game, it was just a blocky type of thing. Skill set tree, herbalism, trap, poison making, etc. And then you got to your base skills for your class. It was easy, but this time it's more fluid. Be like, well, they made it to where they separate them different screens. You can be a berserker, a reaver, or a templar. You want to be a templar, you can be a templar. It will show you the abilities, what they do, and everything else you can do with those abilities. It's simplified, I think. And the cutscenes are very well done, graphically looking amazing. But sometimes the graphics seem to tear, as you can see pixels on one of the characters' foreheads. I only had this incident happen to me 3 times in the cutscene. I believe it was Varric was talking and telling the story, and all I saw was, like, there is some green stuff on his head, and I can see that the graphics were tearing. You just saw pixelated pixels. And I was like, well, that sucks. It only happened 3 times, but still, for a game like this, I was expecting not for that to happen. And the story in Dragon Age 2 is a good one, but compared to the original Dragon Age, it is very lacking and shallow. The reason why I felt this is because there really isn't much of a conflict from the character apart from his family. It just felt like they could have done a lot more with the story and how it's being told. The story itself, compared to Dragon Age 2, Dragon Age Origins was a weak story, but it's how you got to the end goal that mattered. How you were a noble, becoming a Grey Warden, gathering these different races to help you aid against the Blight, and finally defeating the Archdemon. And then becoming the hero of Ferelden. In this game, I felt like I was just a lowlife, like Aladdin. In order to get my way to the top, I had to do jobs. Bad jobs, good jobs, and then become the champion of Kirkwall. It just seemed like in Dragon Age Origins, it was more epic-like, because the way it was. The combat now is fast-paced, but still have your abilities on a cooldown. Now, I like what they were aiming for with the combat. They wanted the player to have control of the attacking. But the thing is, sometimes when you do a charge attack, if you're a warrior, and there's an enemy you're trying to hit, and you charge. But wait, if there's stairs in the way, you're going to charge, but you're not going to hit the enemy. So you have to walk around and then charge the character. It felt more hacky slashy, but it's still better than the last game. I mean, the abilities you have are really, really good. Some that can stun an entire group, some that can knock them back, others that can just, you know, do immersive damage. I mean, even if you're mage, you're warrior, or rogue, the attack animation looks awesome. And that's what I like compared to Dragon Age Origins. The combat system is great. And BioWare has also made injury kits actually matter. I didn't really use them in Dragon Age Origins. I didn't even pay attention to them. But They now seem to matter a lot more, since if your character is injured, their health pool will remain low, certain unit of low. And this will be fine and all, but getting injured can be really easy if you're fighting a high dragon, and the high dragon is like a really big boss and has a ton of health, and there's some parts of the fight when you're fighting a high dragon that he or she is gonna bring adds, and you're gonna need a lot of potions and a good healer. And she can really kick your ass. I'm surprised I beat her or him. In this Dragon Age game, it's not much easy to talk to individual companions and get to know their background better, get them to like you more. You don't go to, let's say, a camp area like in Dragon Age Origins where they are all in one place. No, no, no. They are spread out between a low town, high town, whatever. And in order to even interact with them more from just a simple one-liner, you want to go somewhere? I know, I would just want to talk to you, but you don't want to talk to me. You have to do your companion quests, and it's weird because these companion quests aren't automatically put into your journal. You have to either check your desk, see if you have any new letters, or they just come up out of nowhere. I would like to be able to go to Isabella and just talk to her and get, you know, more who she is, her story. That's what I liked about Dragon Age Origins, is because you could do that. You can interact with your party whenever you wanted. This feels like a restriction, and it's horrible. They should not do this again if they're going to make a sequel. There is some forgettable quests in the game that you just do because, well, it's just there. There's not like, it doesn't have a story behind the quest. You're just doing it because, well, this guy wants me to kill this guy. Okay, go kill that guy. Go back to the guy who wanted me to do it. Get money. Done. To make potions, runes, you will have to order them, which basically someone else makes them for you, which I found kind of stupid. Why can't I just get one of my characters to do it? I mean, I can't make potions on the fly. I have to go to my estate and order them? Well, at least one thing you don't have to do is go to chantries or boards to get quests. They're all sent to you in your house. And that's pretty easy, but I didn't really care. I didn't find it. I mean, if I wanted to be a completist and complete the game fully, I would go wherever to get the quest, which I did. Now, the thing I do like is how you can customize your abilities, tactics, a wide variety of choices, which makes it easier on boss fights. In the PS3 version of Dragon Age Origins, I really didn't know how to do tactics. It was pretty hard on some bosses because my freaking allies, especially ranged classes, would like to go up close in the face. So it got annoying. But in this game, you can change it to where they can use a certain ability. If your team or individual is at a certain health, they can heal or do whatever. If they're in trouble, they can put up a barrier, heal themselves, and it's just really fluid and inviting that you want to think more strategic-like in this game in order to survive. Dragon Age 2 is a compelling game with a wide variety of fun. Though it lacks some of the open world and instead inputs the fast travel system, I give Dragon Age 2 a 7 out of 10. Is this game worth your money? Hell yes. If you're an RPG fan, especially if you're a Dragon Age fan, I would get this game right now. But if you're just new to the series and not really an RPG-like person, you would like this game, but it's not gonna hook you in fast. You have to be playing it for a while. It is still a good RPG, but still not as good as the original. The dumbed-down system and lack of compelling storyline what makes the game inferior. While that the game does bring new things to the table, whether it's the dialogue system they use in Mass Effect, the graphics, and the attack animations. I still haven't beat this game, and I'm gonna beat this game, and hopefully, when they make the next Dragon Age game, don't make it like one where the story is epic and getting to destination is just even more epic, because this is a great series. In gaming news, Dead Rising 2 off the record puts Frank West in Chuck Green's shoes. When I saw this, I was like, fuck yeah. I like Chuck. Chuck is cool. But Frank West, that's where the fucking story is. When Dead Rising 1 ended, I was like, there's gonna be a fucking sequel. And me and my dad were like, yeah, there's gonna be a sequel. And then they come out Dead Rising 2, the trailer, and I'm like, that's not Frank West. Where is Frank West? And everyone was asking, where's Frank West, and why isn't he gonna be the star of Dragon Age 2? I mean, did you ever wondered how Dead Rising 2 would be if it was Frank West instead of Chuck? Well, this is not a DLC. This is not just a case zero. This is a whole new fucking game. The new What If scenario puts Frank West in Chuck's shoes in Fortune City with new missions, different psychopaths, new weapons, new things in Fortune City. They are enhancing the game system and the multiplayer. Hopefully, they make it to where you can save on the fly instead of going to the restrooms. That's annoying. Trying to get to the restroom to save full zombies on the timer, it gets annoying. And also the multiplayer, they could do a two co-op split screen. And I can see why people might be mad why this is, why now? Why not just a DLC? Well, in order for it to be a DLC, it would be a pretty big file size. And a lot of people still like the physical copies of the game. This is a marketing idea by Capcom on capitalizing on a Dead Rising franchise, and to me, it's brilliant. Hopefully we'll see some familiar faces from Dead Rising, the original game. Hopefully we'll see a different side of the story. If this is better, now this is going to be better than Dead Rising 2, because Frank West. We don't want them to add a new character and like be like, well, we don't know what happened to Frank West. He just disappeared. Well, Frank West, he's gonna tell people his side of the story, and it's gonna be epic. Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition confirmed for PC, PS3, and 360. An updatable Super Street Fighter 4. This expansion will be available June 7th for $14.99. A full console product will be shipped out June 28th in North America and June 24th in Europe, with the PC edition in July. The arcade edition will feature four new characters to the Super Street Fighter roster. The game has a demonic pair coming in Strong Force, Evil Ryu, and a more evil version of Akuma, who go by as Oni. Now that. When I saw this trailer to this game and saw Ryu as Evil Ryu, I was thinking, Capcom, what are you trying to do? Well, they're trying to experiment, and people are saying, well, they're just milking the franchise even more. They're gonna kill fighting games for good. No, Capcom is not killing fighting games. Super Street Fighter 4 was cheap. I got it for $40. That's a cheap game. The DLC isn't that bad. You don't need every costume pack, but it's nice to have. and Super Street Fighter Arcade Edition, this is gonna enhance online multiplayer. It is gonna make it better. It's gonna add new characters, new skins. It's gonna be a great DLC. Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition will also have several technical tweaks. Capcom has said that the game will have better character balancing and updated replay channel that lets players follow up to five individual players' replays. Now, that is pretty cool because if you have your favorite, if you have a favorite in Street Fighter and you just want to see how they're doing, how they do the moves, what's their strategies? Are they a aggressive type or are they a defensive type? And it's just a fun thing to have. And the My Channel Advanced option will let players send replay data to 50 individual friends, and an Elite Channel that lets players watch replays of people with the rating of 3,000 PP or more. Finally, players will get to follow and see players in the top league and how they fight to maybe learn to fine-tune their technique. This is something new and refreshing. Super Street Fighter fans have been waiting for a small price. I say this will be the best fighting game, which the most experienced online, making the game have a ton of replay value. This is gonna blow Marvel vs. Capcom 3 out of the water. This is gonna make Mortal Kombat run for the money. I mean, Mortal Kombat's gonna come out, and been seeing a lot of stuff on that, and I'll talk about it next week. But what I want to talk about right now, Sony hot settled details surface. The month-long Sony and Geo hots. Sony's trying to sue Hotz for jailbreaking the PS3 system, but he said he wasn't doing it in intentions of piracy, and Sony doesn't really believe that. Well, it seems like they finally settled their differences, and the month-long battle of Sony versus Geo Hotz has finally ended. The two parties who state that they have settled the matter, with Hotz agreeing to a permanent injunction against his publishing methods to hack the PS3 online. The later part of the agreement covers a wide range of activities, including reverse engineering, decompiling, or disassembling any portion of a Sony product. This means he can't take the Sony product apart and fiddle with the hardware inside anyway. Using any tools to bypass, disable, or circumvent any encryption, security, authentication mechanisms in a Sony product. This means he cannot use any tool to break the security and break, basically disable the firmware to hack the Sony product. Using any hardware to Sony software to cause a Sony product to accept or use unauthorized illegal private software hardware. Basically saying if he uses a hardware to, if he hacks it for pirated movies or games, that's a no-no. Exploiting any Sony project to design, develop, update, or distribute unauthorized software or hardware for use with its own product. Basically a hack tool. Can't design a hack to jailbreak tool for the PS3 anymore, or any Sony product at all. This is all for any Sony product. Basically, you cannot hack any sort of product at all. So you better go to Microsoft for that. He agrees on to say that HOTS is forbidden from circumventing any technological protection measures on any sort of product, including any code device, information encryption, or key that relates to any confidential or proprietary information of Sony. He is also prohibited from trafficking in any technology or information that bypasses technological protection measures on any Sony device or service. With the order mentioning the PS3 3.55 firmware jailbreak by name. Should Haas violate the injunction, he will have to pay $10,000 per violation with a penalty cap of $250,000. Looks like Sony got Haas. I mean, he didn't get sued, he didn't go to jail. He got off really easy, but he can't hack any Sony product. Now, I thought they could have fined him a little bit, but I can see they just, you know, just slap on the wrist. Don't do it again if you don't want to get fucked over. BlizzCon tickets go on sale May 21 and 25. 21st and 25th. Passes are $175 to October 21 to 22 BlizzCon. $500 benefit dinner tickets up for grabs on May 28th. The $154 the tickets are a $25 increase from last year's BlizzCon. There are only 200 passes for the dinner. Speculation: this year's BlizzCon is the unveiling gameplay of their new MMO Titan, also the new World of Warcraft movie announcement trailer. Though this is all rumors. BlizzCon is one of the more hyped about conventions. I heard it is really awkward to go to BlizzCon, but people are gonna go. People are gonna spend $500 for dinner so they can meet some developers. Personally, I wouldn't do that unless you're like Miyamoto or Frank Miller, one of the people I idolize. But some people idolize Blizzard and their money-making schemes that they love. Hopefully at BlizzCon they will announce something on the release date of Diablo 3, if it's going to be this year or next year or next year after, or is it going to be 10 more years? And they're going to show their new MMO Titan, probably. I think it's a first-person shooter MMO. Not excited. But WoW movie? Yes, would like to see the trailer for that. Tim Miller, who has done special effects works on X-Men, X-Men 2, Daredevil, and more, has been named to direct the Deadpool movie. Ryan Reynolds has been cast to play Deadpool. Legendary producer Lauren Shuler Donner has stated, "It's a complete reboot. We are either going to pretend Wolverine Origins never happened or completely mocked it, which Deadpool can do. It's a R-rated script with lots of violence. The people who wrote the script for Zombieland will also write the script for Deadpool. Stop making movies about X-Men. Stop making movies that are... what's that word? Spinoffs. It's just bad. It's not good. People aren't going to change their minds. Wolverine Origins sucked. It didn't suck because of Wolverine. It sucked because of the writing, the plot, some of the cast. And because you fight Deadpool at the end, but he's not really Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds isn't even playing that part at the end. It's someone else. He's basically like Wolverine on steroids with two blades, but he can't be killed only if you chop his head off. Really? Oh yeah, and a climactic ending. Hi, I got a titanium alloy bullet and it's gonna erase your memory, Wolverine. How ironic. Give me a break. And my friend told me this. He showed me a link. They finally cast the villain for Superman. I was wrong. It's not Bizarro. It's Zod. Michael Shannon has been cast as Zod. Now, if he can play how the original Zod was in the movie, he will be an excellent Zod. Because I know he can look the part, but you also play the part. You gotta have that chemistry with Superman, too. You can't just be like, I don't like you, but I gotta kill you. And I wanted to go actually put another villain in it, because in another Superman movie, there was Zod and two other Kryptonians. I mean, are they gonna be like, let's put Zod, but let's have someone else, and then at the end, let's make it climactic to make our next villain Darkseid, I hope. I just got done reading The Blackest Night, the first one, the Blackest Night. Again, it basically starts out how Jordan Green Lantern is mourning the death of Batman, aka Bruce Wayne, and how when Hal Jordan died, he thinks he died a sinner, while Barry the Flash died a saint, because the Green Lantern's tombstone was basically desecrated by his, not his enemies, but his allies. Basically just like, well, you're Parallax, and you basically killed us all, so we don't like you anymore. And came back to life, and basically, and he's even talking about how Aquaman died. He died in some kind of mutated state they was in for months, and how the Flash doesn't really believe Batman's dead. How if anyone can beat death, it's Batman. He always has a plan, and to some degree, he's right. Batman always has a backup plan. It's amazing how he thinks. I mean, he's a human, but his mind is so... he thinks way outside the box, which is amazing because he doesn't have superpowers. He's just a regular guy, but he uses gadgets, and he still finds a way to win. How the Manhunter is dead. He's buried at Mars. Killed by Darkseid followers, apparently. And the Black Hand has seemingly used the skull of Batman to resurrect the dead, meaning heroes and villains who died, or rise as a Black Lanterns in this epic series. Basically, they're gonna come back as zombies. But not the Marvel type of zombies. No. Marvel Zombies was good, but this is just badass. I mean, everything Marvel does, DC does it better. No matter how much people don't want to admit it, DC is where it's at. Well, thanks for listening to my show, and tune in next week for episode 4. Have a great day.